Okay. So I have to tell everybody that this has to do, and I realize that I'm a week late in the CMHS bandwagon, but sitting up front was by far the highlight of my life. Sitting around Gedolim, Gedolei Yisrael, Rabbanim that were around there, was an unbelievable thing. But more than that, there's something that I felt that I had to comment on, because I was able to see something that happened behind the scenes that I wasn't privy to before, and it was something unbelievable. Just the things behind the scenes that you saw, there were some obvious ones, like when Mr. Stark, those who were there, when you saw Mr. Stark, the older Holocaust survivor, when he wasn't there, there was the whole confusion of where everybody was. You look behind, everybody's pointing in a different direction. Everybody's going to the other direction, and that's there. Eating was an absolute challenge. How do you eat when you know the camera could be on you at all times? You could barely space out because they'll catch you. They're going to know. It's eating, going to that. But at the end, this just shocked me. I walked out through the back. When you walk out through the back, behind the curtain, what's there is they have all their props and everything that they have getting ready for the stage, because the stage, obviously, is this massive stage. They normally have plays and everything. You couldn't even hear anything on the stage. All of the speakers are in the crowd, not on the stage itself. We were only hearing the echo of what was going on out there. You were hearing it from behind. You couldn't hear anything else. And the behind are the dressing rooms. The dressing rooms were there. So if you had to go to the washroom, you went into a private washroom that was part of the dressing rooms, one after the other. There was about 12 just dressing rooms altogether, and each one had their own everything, and everything was right there. This is what happened. After I left, I walked behind, and right behind the curtains from the scene itself, there were two guys standing there. Now, I don't know if you walked in. Did you see the huge tank-like, you know, Hummer? Like the souped up, there was a huge car there that was
right
souped
outside.
Up completely, right outside, right? That looked like it was a huge tank with everything there. But I didn't see anybody around. You didn't see anybody around. When I walked to the back, there are these two guys that are beyond, I'm 6 feet tall. They were at least 5 inches taller than me. At least 5 inches taller than me. Wearing unbelievable amounts of gear. I mean, the huge bulletproof vests, right, with these huge sleeves on, these big sleeves that were like dog market, where they can't get bitten by dogs. This stuff on the bottom, they had two massive guns. I mean, the biggest guns you've ever seen. Like, one must have been like an Uzi on the back, and the other one was this huge rifle, just this massive, massive rifle. And the big, big thing over here, and I know, Rabbi Zizek, you probably have seen this before, but standing in the back, they had the little masks with the thing on top, right, with everything there. They had the visors up, but everything was there. And they were ready to go with everything. They had a utility belt that reminded me of like a Batman utility belt. Everything was right there. And I was shocked. And I went up to them and I said, first of all, thank you so much for helping us. I know I appreciate it. And they said, oh, no problem. And that's that. And then I said to them, were you guys here the whole time? Because I didn't see you coming in. And they said, it's our job not to be seen. This was already afterward, right? But it's our job not to be seen. I said, are you guys the only two people here? They said, there was like 20 of us. We're all over the place. Some of us on the rooftop, some around. They even had people in the hotel across the street looking in from a high point window to get a vantage point of everything going on there. Right? So we're all over the place, but you'll never see us. You're not going to see us. Our job is to blend in. Oh, you blended in like that. I can understand. But they blended in completely. And I couldn't believe it. I just said to them, like, that's absolutely amazing. This is crazy. He said, listen, we're always around. You just can't see us. And I'm like, oh, that is amazing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always there, and we have no idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends his malachim that are to take care of us. They're always protecting us, but we have no idea. We don't even think about it. We just expect everything to go well in the best possible way. And this is exactly that. That startling realization just hit me right there. I said, oh my gosh. So I said to them, I thought, you just gave me an idea for my next speech. That was exactly what I wanted to hear to be able to go through. So I'm going to ask this question, and based on it, I'm going to give an idea. And I know it's last week's Parsha, not this week's. And I realize, because I was supposed to say this last week in Parsha's Vayechi, not in Parsha's Shmos.
You have for Wednesday, right?
I'm sorry?
You have for Wednesday, normally.
Yeah, I kind of think it goes with this. It goes all together. And it's not even Parshas Vayechi, it's really Vayigash. But we're not going to go with that. We're just going to say, what was Yosef HaTzadik thinking when he was telling the brothers that he didn't know who they were? When he pretended to be king of Mitzrayim, Tzopnas Paneach, in all his, you know, all his glory, what was he thinking? If this was revenge, you guys did this to me, so I'm going to get back at you. If that's the idea, then why in the world was he crying and not able to keep it together? You're taking revenge. If you don't want to take revenge, then just stop. Just be like, all right, it was me. But he doesn't do it that way. He's holding himself back, hiding behind a wall, and crying so that the brothers don't see him, but yet still going with the facade that I'm Sofnas Paneach and I don't know who you are. What was the plan? If it's kapara, as the Ramban seems to say, he's giving them a kapara for what they did wrong. Who gave him permission to do that? Are you allowed to do that? You're allowed to give somebody a kapara? Like, I beat you up. I did it because you deserved a kapara for what you did before. You're allowed to do that? Why was Yosef allowed to do this? Even that, maybe the kapara works for the Shvatim. He was giving a kapara to Yaakov Avinu? What was he doing this to Yaakov for? This is the strangest thing in the world. If he's mekayim his dreams, and that's also brought by the Ramban, being mekayim his dreams, he saw the dreams and he knew that his nevuah had to come through. Show me one other case of any other Navi being mekayim his nevuah. Show it to me. Where do we ever see a Navi should do that? Do you see a Navi doing that? A Navi saying, I've got to be mekayim my nevuah, so I'm going to make sure that it happens. In fact, Yonah ran away from the kiyum ha-nevuah. Yirmiyahu was doing everything he could to stop the nevuah from coming true. Now granted, those were bad, but this was also bad. This is about the eventual galus and that they were going to bow down to him in galus. What in the world is the ishtadlus in trying to be mekayim your dreams? What does that mean? And again, it's the Ramban, so there's an answer for it. It's just, it seems like a very strange thing altogether. And the fourth answer that the Rishonim give is to test his brothers, to see if they had gotten better. After all, they had something before, and maybe now they were better. So Binyamin was the son that took over for Yosef. Maybe something's different. What mila is there in that? What are you gaining? And again, who gave him Rishus? You're allowed to do that? I don't understand. Just reveal yourself to brothers, tell Yaakovina you're still alive, and be done with it. I don't understand what there's there. But I think that the answer deals with how the dreams showed him what to do. Nevuah, it's possible there were nevuah. I don't know what level of nevuah, though. When we're dealing with the Rambam's 10 levels of nevuah, it's possible it was the lowest form of Ruach HaKodesh. That's still a form of nevuah, but not exactly that nevuah. The dreams showed him what they could be in Gullus under the heading of a leader who really loved them, but refused to show them that he loved them. It's as if this leader would be there, and Yosef Atzadik would be in charge, and he would help them do whatever they needed to do, but the Shvatim would have no idea he was there. And his job would be, in order to get through Gullus in the best way, to give them the Gullus that they needed, while every time that he pushes them away with the left hand, he pulls them in with the right. And he tells them, Es Elokim ani yare, and to be able to say, now that you brought in Binyamin, let's have a meal together. But yet at the same time, accusing them of stealing the cup and throwing Binyamin in jail. What did he do to Shimon? In front of all their eyes, he jailed Shimon, right? After he'd thrown them in jail and taken them out, throws Shimon in jail and then takes them out and lets him sit in a room and lets him sit with everybody else there. A person who's going to do that, his plan, according to his dreams and what he saw, was to always hide, never reveal himself, allow them to be in gullus with the left hand and the right hand pulling them back. When the time was up, either he or his kids or his grandkids, because if he doesn't reveal himself, he's an Egyptian, his kids would have stayed in power all the way through. Then at some point, they get up and say, it's time to go.
It seems, Pashtus, that he was testing to see if they changed.
Right, but who gave him permission to do that?
I don't know. That's besides the point. That's what seems...
No, that is the point, though. Meaning, if that answer is going to work, then the point is, who gave him permission to do that? Why is that? That I would ask on and say, why is that an answer? How could that possibly be the answer? If he's testing them, who gave him permission to give that? That's what I'm saying. That's why I think this might be different. He wasn't given permission. It was an opportunity for him to see what to do. And that's what the dream was telling him. The same way his other dreams, the dreams of Paro, showed him what to do for the famine and the hunger, what they were supposed to do there. Don't worry, as long as you save food, then you'll be able to get through the famine. This dream was also an opportunity for him to see, if you do this, everything will be there. And he only recognized it by Yakir Yosef Esachov. Once he saw them bow down to him, he said, oh, this is the dreams. This is it. This was not a plan of his. This is not something he went into thinking, here's what I can do. It's just that. If that's the strategy, and if the strategy is there, Now we understand why he couldn't handle it. Yosef couldn't handle Lo Yachol Lisapek. He so badly wanted to reveal himself to his brothers, but he knew if he did so, he would lose this entire opportunity. Everything would be gone. And everything he had striven to do to help them in Gullus would no longer be there. And he was right. Because as soon as he revealed himself, the Mitzrayim automatically looked down at him. His children never took over. And eventually the Jews were enslaved. In fact, Nistmui Neim Velibam Shal Yisrael, once Yaakov Avinu was dying or died, that's when the Gullus seems to have started. Because even though the Shvatim were still alive, Yosef was even king for another 40 years after that. But it didn't matter. Everything was different once they saw that he's a Jew, he's not an Egyptian. Had he stayed that way, but Yosef, just think of it from Yosef's perspective, he wanted to hug his father again, he wanted to be with his brothers again, he wanted to discuss with them what had happened and go through. He couldn't stand to see his brothers in pain, and he was crying and crying and crying until finally he said, "Ani Yosef Odavichai," and he gave it away. And in that, it's almost with those five words, he ruined, I want to say, Gullus for Klal Yisrael for the rest of our lives. I'm not putting the blame on Yosef. This is obviously through a plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and obviously Yosef HaTzadik did everything he could to make it happen. But it's almost as if the reason why we're in Gullus is because we couldn't finish a Mitzrayim. The reason we couldn't finish a Mitzrayim is because Yosef couldn't finish what he had to do. It's almost like he had a job. And maybe again, it was all part of Hashem's plan, knowing Yosef wouldn't be able to do it, and therefore it's that. But we lost. We lost, and it comes with this bigger, longer Gullus. We now have a Gullus of crusades and inquisitions and pogroms and holocausts. That's what comes with, because Yosef couldn't keep going. And I think the idea is that our realization, our job in this Gullus, is to realize that there's someone behind the mask. Whether we realize it or not, I'm not saying that Mr. Trump's going to get up one day and President Trump is just going to pull off the mask and be like, "Here I am, Yosef Itzadik. You had no idea. I'm really, I don't know, Harry from Brooklyn," right? That, I'm not saying that that's going to happen. And I actually would tell you, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. But to say that there's someone behind the scenes, a whole slew of National Guardmen that are taking care of you, Malachim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are behind everything you do, that there is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, that's it. And I'm going to end with this Kedushas Levi. The Kedushas Levi says in the beginning of Vayichi that Ephraim is before Menashe. Right, and we all know the idea that Yaakov, you know, switched his hands into Ephraim. He said, "Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'chimenasha." And right there is a pella, because it should be Menashe Ephraim. You want to switch your hands because Ephraim is the more important one. I hear that, but saying Ephraim before Menashe is insulting. Insulting. If somebody would do that to me, I'm the oldest in my family. Somebody would say to me, they'd say, "Yisimcha Elokim ke Rafi v'Tzvi." I'd just be like, "What?" And they say, "Achron, Achron, Chaviv." I'd be like, "No, you didn't mean it that way." That would be insulting. And to do it in front, you want to say the hands maybe was something different, but this is insulting. Says the Kedushas Levi, it's beautiful. Menashe, he's named for the pain that Yosef went through in Mitzrayim. Kino shani Elokim es kol amali. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to help me forget all of my pain, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put me through all this pain. Ephraim is ki frani v'erbani be'eretz Mitzrayim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has allowed me to sum everything. Here's the pshat, and it's beautiful, says the Kedushas Levi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always rofe before the makkah. He sends the refuah before the makkah ever happened. When we get hurt, we think like, "Oh, how's God going to get us out of this?" You don't understand. He already got you out of it. You just haven't seen the refuah yet. Hashem sent the refuah. It's already in the world. The makkah only comes after the refuah was sent. So now that there's refuah in the world, he can give you that makkah. And we're just waiting for the refuah to reveal itself. That's all it is. Ephraim, the refuah, is always before Menashe, which is the makkah, even if we don't see it. So the idea behind saying Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim Menashe, and why we tell our children this, we say Yisimcha Elokim ke Sara Rivka Rachel Valea, but Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim Menashe? No offense to Ephraim Menashe, but what about the other Shvatim? What about Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov? Yisimcha Elokim ke Yaakov, Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. And the obvious answer is, well, we're going to quote a pasuk, but we don't do that by the ladies. So why should it be any different by one or the other? And the answer is because this is what we're saying. We're in Gullus. Things are horrible. And we have all these things that we look at and we're like, how in the world? Can anybody answer me how Mashiach is going to come in a world like this? In a world as divisive and filled with issues as we have today? How in the world is Mashiach going to make it work? What's he going to do? How is he going to get rid of the Dome of the Rock and convince the Arabs that Yerushalayim is really ours and they should give us everything? How is that going to happen? But the refuah is already there. We just don't see it. So we tell our kids, you think you had a bad week? You think there were different hardships that you had? You don't know how you're going to get out of it? Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chemin asha se'kedushas Levi. Because the refuah is there. The National Guard is there. The Malachim are all there. The man behind the mask is there. We just don't see it yet. So when the Makkah comes, never worry. The refuah is already in front of our eyes waiting for us to do it. That's what I was thinking. All within a span of 2 seconds. Have a great week, guys.